Let's pray together. Father, bless us as we consider how we can have great impact on those around us that so desperately need to know you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Come on in. So I really need to work on my schedule so I don't wind up being gone the second week of class. It just breaks it up terribly. I'm glad that it worked out for John to get to talk to you guys last week. I hope you detected the passion and excitement he has for winning lost souls. Very, very exciting. John's been working at my house, and he's been working slowly, largely because I interrupt him and talk to him. And we talk about things like this, which is why I wanted him to come in and speak to you guys. I hope as well that what we talked about this morning will be a complement to what we're talking about in class, that you'll maybe use the sermon to underscore our efforts in this class and to demonstrate why what we're doing is so, so very important. This really is the stuff of life and needs to be a greater focus of God's people. So I want to begin by going back and reminding you of what were the two key passages. I'm watching because there are all kinds of people outside the door there, and I don't know if I should kind of pause. Wait, let's see. Yes. See, here they come. Are there others behind you? Oh, yeah. Is it moving kind of slow today?
Yeah. It's
obviously. I'm just seeing all the people going back and forth by the doors outside, so I'm thinking maybe I should hold off again. Come on in. So I want to just briefly to touch on these two scriptures that I gave you last week. And now my clicker is not going to work, is it? I can fix that. No, I can't. Well, I think the guys messed with it.
Sure.
Oh, always throw the tech guys under the bus, whether it's
I can yell at my dad if you want me to.
I would really be glad if you would go tell your dad that the slides are frozen. And that's okay, because people are still coming in, like this guy. Mason's just so. Oh, text him. Yes, text him. Will he be monitoring his phone during class?
Yeah, because...
Is that allowed?
Me and my dad does it all the time, so.
The tech guys messed up my slides, Kendrick.
What do you? They messed up your slides, or you can't?
No, they're not advancing, even with the keyboard. And now they're blank.
Turn it off and back on, right?
Yeah, that's always the best.
That's how a Mac works. This is sadly not Mac equipment.
Where's this?
It's plugged in there. Otherwise, it doesn't work. But see, the keyboard's not working either, but.
Which one is yours?
Is it this one?
Yeah.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's work. I worked out this one for you. So, since you're the one to plug it in, I wouldn't blame it on the tech guys.
All I'm saying is working before the tech guys came in and messed with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. I won't call it name. I know. So this one's not. Okay, let me get you the keyboard.
It's not working either.
Are you sure?
I just said that.
Yeah. You got a battery.
He is a real tech guy. He doesn't believe anything you tell him on the phone call.
This is true.
Well, my tech guy always figured out it was used.
You got a mouse.
Yeah, and I usually don't
believe. I do have the mouse. Yep. So you got some connection going. I mean, they tell me the battery's dead. You keep going.
No, I actually used that to start class.
Did you?
I'm telling you, when y'all came in to connect it to the stream, it froze. And you know what? I can actually teach class without slides. It's fun.
There you go.
So,
you're going to have to rough it, David.
What's that?
You're going to have to rough it. I remember the days of flip charts and shit. Yeah.
Hey, they used to have those, what are they called? Those projectors, the liver projectors.
What do you call those?
Overhead projectors.
You could write on a little paper and
Thank you. You're a good man. I take back almost everything I said about you before you came in.
You now had to get it all in and out of there.
Yeah. Well, it's out there. It's gone to the world now. Hey, look, watch this. There are the two passages. So these two passages really will define the purpose for the whole class. So if you look at your Bible at Titus 2 and verse 10, that's a passage where we were talking about how we are meant to make the gospel look attractive, right? That's our purpose, to live a life before the world that stirs their curiosity and potentially from that ultimately draws them to Jesus. Same thing in Matthew 5 and verse 16. There at the end of the Beatitudes, we have that next segment, the salt of the earth, the light of the world. But verse 16 is the key. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So there is something about our life that connects with the world and enables us to draw people to God. And so that's the idea that we really want to spend this quarter unpacking. What is it about the disciples' holy life that connects with the world and offers us an opportunity to reach them? Now, both of these passages have attached lists, right? What's the list that comes with Matthew 5:16? Yes. Right before that, you have the Beatitudes, which describe what a kingdom citizen looks like. This is who you are, right? And it is that person that he says shines as a light in the dark world. But we have the same thing in Titus, remember? What is our list in Titus? See if we can stretch you back 2 weeks and get you to remember that.
The duties of older, younger servants.
Yes, the five categories, right? Old men, younger men, old women, younger women, and servants. And each of those five categories has a list underneath it of how these people are supposed to behave. And it's in that context that Paul is saying, hey, you make the gospel look good, right? Don't do anything that reflects badly on the gospel message. And so those are the lists that we're primarily going to be working. That's kind of what we're doing with the class. I do want to do one thing I did not do 2 weeks ago in introducing the class. We just didn't get to it. And that is to deal with a couple of potential objections. Some people would hear all of this, and they would say, it sounds like this is just a class telling us how to go out in culture and put on a show for people. This sounds like we're just trying to go out there and get people to know to notice us and to say what great people we are. What would you say about that? Is that what this is about? Putting on a show for people? Please don't shake your heads. No, I actually want y'all to kind of discuss it.
We live a
show.
Okay, what's your definition of show? What, I'm sorry?
Yeah, we live humble lives. We're supposed to be living humble lives.
Okay.
So we shouldn't be going out saying, like, we're all rich and all this stuff.
Okay. You want to work yours a little more?
I think it's incumbent on us to show the world who we are and what we are like. It is not to show the world that we are better or somehow above them or somehow over them or somehow just weirdness. Okay, we need to show a life that is disciplined, that is dedicated to God, that treats people with respect, that treats people like equals, okay. and not be overbearing.
Okay, thank you for that. Anyone else want to weigh on this?
I mean, people think it's a show. Then we may not be doing it right.
Okay.
I mean, we need to acknowledge why we do what we do.
Okay. So think about that. That goes to what? I see. I'm not missing it. Your hand actually extends just over the top of this. So wave at me, and I can hear it. Let's do this. Here, I'll get it between Bev and Richard, so I can see both of y'all. What is Jill talking about?
Intent.
Intent?
Our heart.
Heart? Are the words coming to your mind?
You're genuine motivation.
Sorry?
Motivation.
Motivation? Are you authentic? Are you genuine? Let me give you what I think is the key to discerning this. It's in Matthew 5:16. It's in the text we were in. Look at Matthew 5:16. You look at the text and you see if you can spot how we deal with that objection. This verse tells us what this is about. Do you see it? Sorry?
Our goal.
What is the goal?
To give glory to our Father.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That they may see our good works. So it's what we do. It's our life. But then do what?
Glorify God.
Glorify the Father who is in heaven. So we're not seeking personal glory. We're not trying to go out and get people to be impressed with us. But we are trying to get people to glorify God. We're trying to get them to God. And what Matthew is, or what Jesus is saying in Matthew, is that our lives are a tool in doing that. So I think that statement at the end of verse 16 is the way we eliminate that objection. This is not about my glory. I don't want someone to be looking at me and say, "Oh, you're such a great dad, or you're such a great husband, or you're such a great worker." Who do I want to get the glory in that? Yeah, I want to give God the credit. I want people to see God through me. Yes, sir.
Well, the ironic thing is, if you look at out in the religious world today, the show actually produces. If you look at the mega churches and all this, they bring them in by the droves. And yet, we need to be the opposite of that. Because when they bring them in, they're not necessarily giving them the food they need.
Now, I'm not sure, though, in the case of the mega church, that the draw is the crowd that attends. Mm-hmm. What draws people to a megachurch?
Entertainment.
Yeah. I think that the big draw, I'm not diminishing the other
altogether. No, but I think that's part of the show.
Yeah, I think, but not the show we're talking about.
No.
Yeah.
I'm saying the preacher tells them what they want to hear.
That's it.
Right.
They give them what they want to have, right? You don't hear a lot about hell and sin and
right. The
negative.
Right.
And we've got to give them the opposite.
Correct.
In a genuine way to show them what the long-term benefit is.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's like a motive. Those type of churches deliver more of a motivational speech.
Yeah. Okay. And so what we're wanting people to do is to look at our lives and to see Jesus. That's the point. Yes, sir. I'm passed over you. I'm sorry about that. Fuss at me about that.
I wanted to tell you that, too. You've done that several times.
Okay.
We live a life that is supposed to be consistent with what the Bible teaches. If we are consistent with that, no, it's not bragging about ourselves. Showing that we are consistent with what God wants us to do. We're not trying to show off, we're just living consistent.
Let's say it this way. We're not trying to show off, but we are trying to show. You with me?
That's a good word.
Whose ideal was that, by the way? What is Jesus, what's the figure Jesus uses in verse 15? What's his figure? Remember this?
Light. Lamp.
Sorry?
Light. Lamp.
Light? What's the other one? Is it in 15? Sorry?
It's 14. The city on the
it's 14, thank you. Like a city set on a hill. Right? Any of y'all ever seen a city built way up on a hill? Surely you have a Middle East story here, Scott, about a city up on a hill.
I'll leave that where he's preaching a sermon. I'm seeing Galilee, city of Hippos.
Up on a hill.
Cita is on the hill.
Yeah.
Not Tiberias. Cita, which is the equivalent of Las Vegas. So.
I was thinking about there's a monastery in Italy that became a key battlefield during World War II that's built way up on the top of this hill. And I can't remember the name. Do you ever remember the name
of
it? Monte Cassino. I kept saying Monte Cristo, and I'm thinking, no, that's a movie. Monte Cassino, yes. And listen, you get up on top of that, you see everywhere. And from all around, you look up and you see this thing. And from far off in the distance, you can see this monastery up on this hill. And so Jesus is saying, I want you to be that. Think about the other figure that he uses. He wants us to be light and darkness, right? So, if you've ever been out, like out from cities where all the light clouds the sky, if you've ever been way out, like out west, it's really, really dark, turn on a flashlight, what happens? Cuts through the darkness. Everybody can see that, right? You with me? I want you to be that. And so anyone who's struggling with this objection, well, you know, it sounds like you're putting on a show. In a sense, that's exactly what Jesus is saying. I want my people out there working in their circle, shining and saying Jesus has the better way by the life that we live. So that's a biblical idea that the Lord presses hard, that he wants, okay? So, not for my glory, but for his glory. I think that's what the difference is. Let me give you a second concern that probably needs to be raised here. And that is, I think some people assume that their only responsibility to lost people is to shine. In other words, I'm going to go out, I'm going to work my job like a good disciple should, I'm going to treat my family like a good disciple should, and all the people around me can see my life, and if they're really interested, then they'll come and ask me about it. So my job as a Christian is just to go be a good godly person in culture, and that's it. Y'all buy that?
It's a start.
It's a start?
You were good until you said that's it.
Say what?
I said you were good until you got to that.
Yeah, I'm putting a period on the end of that sentence, right? Is that the limit of our responsibility? Why not? Because it would be easier that way.
That's not what we're tasked to do.
Who tasked us to do more? And what are you thinking about when you say that?
I mean, our responsibility is to bring others to Christ.
Okay. And who tasked us to do more than just be a good example?
Jesus.
Go preach.
Yeah, yeah. How many times is that go word there? And we're not speculating about go, but it means, right? Because we read the New Testament, and Paul didn't wait in Jerusalem for Gentiles to get so interested that they would come to Jerusalem to hear the gospel, right? What did he do?
He went there.
Yeah, he went, you know, map out the journeys in your brain. He went to all those places and connected with all those people. Jesus did the same thing. How was he able to meet the Samaritan woman? He went into her territory, right? He's at the well when she comes out to draw. He engages her. He's going to the people. Let me add something to that. Again, think about Matthew 5:16. How will people see your good works and end up glorifying God? How does that happen? How do people look at my life and end up giving God glory?
I have to give God glory. I have to let them know that that's the glory. I can't just assume that they're going to do that.
Yeah, there's stuff that has to happen in between here. Doesn't. People don't just look at how I behave myself in an appropriate way at work and say, man, look at what God's doing through him on the job. How are they going to know that? Did I cut you off? Yes.
No. A good example that somebody that taught us, when someone says in the grocery store, oh, your kids are so well behaved, don't say, thanks. Yeah, we're so
who got the glory?
Yeah, God. The Bible taught us how to do that.
Yeah, yeah. We want God to get the glory, but that doesn't naturally happen. It only happens as a consequence of me and you intentionally trying to tie what's good in my life to God so people know he is the reason.
There are a lot of people who do good things
yes.
who are not Christian.
And the only way they're going to know that our good is different is if we make the connection. So
right.
here's my point. We're going to have to speak. Okay? No way around that. We're going to have to intentionally work in the middle to help people make this connection and understand this. So a godly life is not a substitute for going and speaking. Okay, so what I want to do from here on out is I want to start getting into the meat of this class and talking a little bit about, well, let me throw the question up here because I want us to wrestle with this together here at the beginning. What is it about a disciple's holy life that would create curiosity in lost people and maybe open a door for questions and study? So I'd like to begin tonight brainstorming this question with you. I don't have an agenda beyond tonight. I'm going to work these lists in Matthew 5 and Titus 2. It's going to be pretty random. I'm going to pull out some of these qualities, and I want us to talk about them together. It's going to be real simple. What's this quality all about? What does it look like in life? How does that impact lost people? Those are the basic three questions we'll work all the way through the class. But I'm happy to get outside Matthew 5 and Titus 2. If you can think of other things that answer this question, things in our life, maybe that you've actually experienced that impact lost people, draw lost people, I'm happy to let you help me build the list. And so I want to start tonight just by doing some brainstorming. I want you to think about this question and how you would answer it. What is it about a disciple's holy life that would be noticed and perhaps create curiosity and lost people around us?
I can think of two.
You got some for me? Let's go. Let's make a list.
One was how you deal with tragedy or bad things or whatever term you want to use has been one reason that people have come to me or asked me questions or something. And then the other one has been, how do I word this, when you aren't ashamed to claim it when the majority around you don't. I guess that makes sense. For example, I work in corporate America and I don't shy away from being a Christian. It's in my signature. I mean, I put it on my About Me page, and that has brought people to ask me questions because it's not hidden.
Okay. Let's talk about the first one.
Okay.
Tell me about how Christians react to tragedy.
Still find ways to glorify God in it.
Find ways to glorify God. Okay, thank you for that. Yep.
We have a peace knowing that nothing too terrible can happen to us because we have the promise of heaven.
Mm-hmm. And that this isn't
heaven. Yeah.
This is temporary.
Yeah. Think about when I was thinking about this very thing today, I thought about a disciple's peace. Like, if you get a terminal diagnosis without God, what is that?
That's the end.
Yeah.
You see the end.
Fear.
There's nothing. But yeah, it's not just fear, and it's not just the end, it's the nothingness beyond the end, right? And so the thing that the disciple has, listen, if I got a terminal diagnosis tomorrow, I'd be terrified. That'd be scary. I'm not gonna lie to you about that. But not like the world is, right? I'm thinking about, okay, is this gonna hurt? Right? How quick? How much time do I have? I want to spend time with my granddaughters? I'd be concerned about all that stuff. But not about what's after, right? Because okay, we have the peace. And so I actually think crisis moments, we ought to come back and work that and talk about that. Crisis moments are great opportunities for disciples to look different. So thank you for that. And then, like this. Actually, I like this. I like this language. Claim it. I am very bold on my job. I am very open with all my coworkers about being a Christian. All right? I'm not really the person to stand up here and talk about this. It is really easy to be a Christian on my job, right? So some of you who understand the other side of this better talk to me about that. Why is this a moment?
I hadn't always been that way. And but now, like, we have this whenever you get, because I talk to a lot of new hires and a lot of interns. And so I'm always doing a about me. Tell me if they want to know about your career. And I ordered my about me, and I open and tell them that I ordered in what's in the importance of my life. And I start with my faith, and then I talk about my family, then I talk about my hobbies, and then I talk about my career. It's at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I tell them that. And I've had people tell me, I'm going to change my, or come to me and say something because I was bold enough to stand in front of all these people and say, this is what's important to me.
Interesting.
This, and I'm not going to just tell you about what I do, because that's the bottom of the list.
Interesting that they know that's how it ought to be, and it's not that way. That's interesting. I had a good friend that printed out a one-sided sheet of paper that said at the top, what I believe. And then he just typed out a list of things that were sort of his fundamental worldview. I believe that God exists. I believe that God has spoken, and on. And he just made a pile of those and left it on his desk. And when it ever came up in a conversation, he would say, this is what I believe. Love to talk to you about it if you want to. I thought that was a pretty good approach. Not that I've ever been in that situation. Yes, ma'am?
This may be aging me a lot, but...
this may be what?
Aging me a lot. But when I think about when you're put to the test, and we can all say that we are, but if it came to that point, and I think of Columbine, of that young lady, and those gunmen were in there and say, is anybody in here a Christian?
Yeah.
She raised her hand, stood up, and she lost her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the ultimate to me. We always think about, yeah, I can do it, but when it comes to that, what's up?
I do think that this one, claiming it in public, especially in a world that is more and more hostile to what disciples believe, becomes more and more and more difficult. But I also think, I think our impulse is to imagine the people who will push back and disagree and hostile to us. But there is another cut of humanity out there. Listen, most of America pretty much believes the kind of things we believe and is just staying quiet about it. And so think about the opportunity that is there to be alive when we're willing to be vocal about it and claim it. I may still.
I have one young lady tell me that her mom told her, don't tell anybody that you're a Christian.
Really?
Just go do your job. Mm-hmm. And so when she heard me say something, she came to me and said, I can't believe you actually said that.
Out loud.
And she said, I'm gonna start actually saying it.
Yep.
She was afraid to say anything because she was told not to.
So there we go. Thank you for that. Okay, same question. I'm looking for things about a disciple's holy life that could create curiosity amongst all people around us. Let me say this too, and I'm coming to you next, but let me say this too. It may not create curiosity with everybody, right? But there are all kinds of different kinds of people out there who are different places. And so think about that too. You may not be able to cover everybody with one attribute of the holy life, but there may be a cut of people out there who would say, that, like this one, right? Okay, you got the floor.
So I got into a conversation this last week that I never had before with a person, and it was kind of interesting in the way it kind of came out. This gentleman is from Israel. He lives in the United States, but his family's there, and he works for a company in Israel that we've been doing some business with. And so we talked about business for a while. We got to the end. I said, hey, just want to check on you. I said, how's your family in Israel, and how are the people, the team in Israel that you... And he stopped dead in his tracks and said, thank you. you for asking me about that. And that started into this conversation about religious things. And at the end of that, he said, I don't believe in religion. He goes, I have faith, but I don't really believe in religion because I've seen too much death around religion. And that was the statement that just kind of took me back. But I told him, I said, you know, so that's interesting. I said, I'm a Christian. And I said, I worship with a bunch of people who are really good people who watch out for each other. And he, and that kind of thing took him back a little bit because he was like, really? You know, so it, the conversations that you can get in with people if you just open the door and just be kind or ask about something is it can really, it really can change your day. I mean, I've thought about that conversation now, I don't know how many times this week since I've had it, because, you know, how can my next conversation with him take this conversation a little bit further?
Yeah, another, to another level. You said kind. I was actually, as you were talking, thinking about
caring
about people.
Compassion.
Yeah, compassion. These are ideas worth exploring. In part because I think people really tend to be self-absorbed. Do y'all find that to be true? People really tend to be self-absorbed. And a quick little story along the line of what Randy's saying about the value of caring. There was a guy from a church I was working with that had a coworker with a sick child, and pretty serious, like in the hospital sick. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll pray for your daughter. In fact, it was a Wednesday. He said, we'll announce it at our church tonight, and we'll pray for your daughter. And we did. And she got better after a week or so. And the next Sunday, his family was at church. He said, my own church didn't pray for my kid. And you people that don't even know her were praying for her. Five people obeyed the gospel out of that act of caring. And so I think in a world where people tend to be really, really self-absorbed, something that really, like looking at my picture there, kind of brightens things, that shows, is people who are just caring. And again, not putting on a show that I care about you or that I'm interested in you, but having that genuine heart that cares about people. You with me? Yes, sir.
I think Randy's story makes a really good point, and that's having the willingness to invest in a relationship. Just that short period of time, he developed a relationship and surprised this person to where they asked more questions. And the things that you've written on the board, if you look at them by themselves, yeah, I get that. But embedded in that, if you have a relationship, these things develop, then that leads to a lot more opportunities.
That's why I think things like inviting people is so much better than cold calling people. How many in this room in your life have ever done door knocking with a group from church? Raise your hand. And
if
how many of you
if
would
you're
be
old, you did.
How many of you would be real excited about doing that next Saturday? I actually remember as a teenage kid at Kleinwood.
Didn't we do it on the neighborhood over here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm way older than you.
No, I know.
So this would like be in the other building, which meant we were running around Greenwood Forest early on a Saturday morning, which delighted. What's that?
The kids have done it since we've been in this building.
Yeah. Right.
The kids.
Making sure that I was agreeing with that.
And, you know, I'm not. Look, anything someone wants to do to try to get the gospel out, I'll be a cheerleader for you. I don't want to go door knocking. I think it largely offends people. Doesn't tend to open doors. And I think the reason for that is because exactly what John was saying. There's no relationship there. I don't know who Scott is. He's a random guy who showed up at their door and interrupted their morning on Saturday. This is not a happy moment. Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons do this all the time, and people don't say nice things about that, right? think it's way easier to say to someone that you've got some credibility with, they know you're not a nut job, and they know there won't be snakes at the service. And so they're way more open. Oh, listen, no. I have had people say, y'all don't do snake stuff at your church, right? And that's actually come up.
I've different known part people of the country. That did that.
Yes, yeah. Well, there's some Kentucky coming out right now.
Tennessee,
if you can get them to open the door.
Yes. So my point is, way better to work with a relationship basis than to work with, you know, people that don't know you at all, right? And so, yeah, I think that's a vital piece of it. And what John gave us was really kind of an umbrella here, because then we could just make the whole sublist, right? What does that look like? Because it would include some of the stuff Randy was saying about caring and compassion and some of that. But I want to keep we're brainstorming. You see the potential to work here, though, right? You start thinking about this. There are things that we have opportunities to do every day that may not result in a baptism tomorrow, but maybe move us a little closer to helping them see God. Okay, I need to go here. What you got?
One of the things that kind of stands out, I think, at work is speech, how you talk, and what the language you don't use catches people's attention. Sometimes it's awkward because they start apologizing. And I've never known how to handle it. Gotcha. It's like, why are you apologizing to me? But,
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I don't fly. because the people sitting next to me ask me what I do, and then it's like you've got COVID after that.
It's a perfect opportunity to have 200 people there.
Feature.
You got a captive audience
there. For 3 hours.
How many of you work in cussing settings? Oh, I should not raise my hand for this.
I used to.
In cussing settings.
Oh, yeah. If you work in an environment, you did. It's there.
I work in the garbage industry.
I'm sorry?
I work in the garbage industry. So.
Is that a cussing? Yeah, okay. So you know, if you're around people that talk that way all the time, let me ask you, do they notice that you don't?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, they apologize.
And eventually, yeah.
Some of them will actually change. You know,
around you especially?
Know, I'm around them, so yeah. I'm not going
to
talk about
them. Yeah, I need to be careful about that.
They always apologize.
Yeah,
Isn't that interesting?
Which tells you that they know.
There's
a value associated with that kind of speech.
Isn't that an interesting thing to kind of ponder? You know, why does it matter, right? If we all kind of want to have our own moral values and do our own thing, why can't he just do his thing? Why should he be worried about offending me? And yet he is. He's there. I used to have a band director that was always worried because I'd jog during his rehearsals. And he'd see me out there and he'd be really worried that maybe he'd cussed with the kids. While he was doing that. And I finally said to him one time, I says, is the idea of an all-seeing God lost on you? Do you not get what that means? But anyway, he was worried about me. He should have worried about God. But, I think people do notice when you keep your speech clean.
Especially under pressure.
Yeah.
That's when everybody tends to let go, right?
Okay, yeah.
Now you can say whatever you want to because bad things have happened. Justified to lose it.
Well, yeah, and the other thing I'm thinking here is it just refraining from cuss words?
No. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Just talking about people, gossip.
Drinking.
I'm glad you mentioned anger, because I think even if you don't cuss, the way you speak to people when they're angry, because I think folks are very accustomed to people just losing it and really saying mean and hurtful things, especially like supervisors, you know, when they're mad, kind of going off on people. That's kind of a well-known thing to happen in a workplace setting. And not being that way. So in this case, it's not what I'm doing, it's what I refrain from doing. Is something that I think people notice. And I think over time, would you rather have a supervisor that loses it and goes off on you and cusses at you?
No.
or one who keeps the voice down and is gentle and maybe even firm with you, but at the same time mixed with this weird kindness, right? And so one of the things I wrote down in my notes for this class is some of this stuff is soil preparing stuff. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Before, my wife will tell you this, and I only know this because I've heard it from her. Before you can go out and plant plants in a garden, what do you got to do?
Turn the soil.
You got to prep the soil. You got to
fertilize
it. I don't know what it is that people do because I buy my vegetables at H-E-B. But you got to prep the soil for that. And so I'm not talking about God yet, but the way I'm speaking to them is light. It's making the gospel look good. And so when the opportunity comes, maybe it's going to be 2 years down the road, when the opportunity comes, the fact that I've been this way winds up having an impact. So some of this stuff can be very immediate in its impact, like in the middle of a crisis. Other of this stuff is just stuff you do over a long time. And then the moment comes where everything kind of comes together and God works providentially and he opens the door and then say, yeah, I'm going to talk to Heidi because, man, she has always had kind things to say to me. I think speech is a big, broad category. Maybe we need to dig around several places there. I need to get Kenneth back here because I'm going to go right here. Go ahead.
So in addition to speech, like in my job, I had a lot of opportunities where I was outside the workplace but with work people.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up at dinner, you end up socializing and this and that, and I'm like the only one not drinking.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And almost invariably, if they didn't know me at the time, their first question was, you don't want to drink? No, I don't drink. And it would bring up a very short conversation, but it wasn't just drinking, but it was the whole atmosphere. I didn't go places sometimes where they'd go. I wouldn't.
So you're saying that there's like a culture to the drinking, not just the alcohol itself. Again, not a frequent problem around the office here. We do not have many lunches that involve
coffee, maybe.
Isn't it?
If you are talking about coffee, some of us drink heavily. So I want to extrapolate. Is what Kenneth is saying accurate? Would that be something that people out in the workplace would readily notice if you are not imbibing? Okay, let me ask you another question, just generically. Do you think people generally, as a rule, see that as a good thing? That you're not drinking?
No.
Or they're like, what's wrong with you?
It's a mix.
It depends.
I was in a similar situation that Kenneth talked about, and my boss's wife came up to me with a glass of water. She whispered in my ear, she goes, here's a glass, it's just water, but it'll make people think you're drinking. And I said, I don't need that. I said, I'm fine. Letting people know that I don't drink. It's really okay. But she was trying to watch out for me, and I appreciated that, but I thought it was odd.
I had a friend one time that was talking to me about this and asking me if I drank, and his comment to me was, yeah, I really think that's the better way to roll. I think that's the better way to do life without that. And it made me wonder, is maybe he discovering some issues in his own life with that. Again, some of these categories aren't going to be light moments with everyone. It may be moments more like, very strange, don't want anything to do with him. But that doesn't mean it's going to be that way with everyone. Or it doesn't mean it's going to be that way with someone forever. Because the interesting thing about alcohol is, guess what happens statistically the longer you live with alcohol?
More likely you are to become a drunk.
When I was there, every different department I went to, one of their first questions was, do you drink alcohol?
Yeah.
Because it adversely impacts your health.
And so, statistically, the older people get, guess what? the less likely they are to drink. And so there's this curve, you know, once you get to your teens, it shoots up and rides up here for 20 and 30, and then in the 40s and 50s, it starts going down. So over time, people learn. So the reason I'm making that point is, someone may look at you right now on your job and think, well, that's pretty weird, this guy doesn't drink. But maybe if y'all work together for 10 years, he's gonna have a different view of that over time. So not always working for me. You've been so patient, you've just held out for me waiting, and I appreciate that.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
So it's funny, when I used to work, I guess that's could be two ways to put that. But when I used to work, Jean and I were out with my boss and her husband and another client, and they brought alcohol they were gonna drink. And she said, how can you guys have such a good time without drinking? It was a question she asked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we said, we always have a good time. We don't need to drink. And it kept them from ordering any alcohol that night. And they went on a month of anti-alcohol thing. I don't know what happened after that. but the point is that, you know, they used to make fun of me at work. I was always the designated driver. I mean, you know, it was just the way it was. And it is a culture.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know if that helps or not.
Well, no, that's just it's just an interesting thought to add. And by the way, this is one of the reasons that I don't want to set the agenda for this class, because I'm in a very different work setting than you guys are. And I really would kind of like to get more of a sense of what you guys who are out there mixing it up with lost people every day.
I have another.
I'm coming back to it. I just remembered. So, but what you see registering with lost people, and I think we can get it in. We got a couple minutes left.
I wanted to do the opposite of dealing with tragedy, because also how you deal with prosperity and good things. Are you taking the credit, or are you giving it to God? Is another way I think we can show.
I wonder a lot about, I mean, I think I could run with this, because it isn't just prosperity.
Just good things. Any
positive
things happening. You got the promotion. Yes, I did great. Like, taking all of that and making it about yourself versus giving the glory.
Let me go back to what Heidi was saying earlier about giving God glory for the good in your life, even around people who aren't Christians. We're okay with saying that with each other, right? Someone says, how you doing today? I'm blessed, right? I'm blessed, I'm good. God's been good to me, right? But would I say that in a setting where people weren't like me? Would I say that in a work setting? Oh, God, yes, ma'am.
People will make a comment about any of these categories or whatever, and I just say, only by God's grace.
Yeah. So, or Lord willing, y'all still say this? My dad said this forever. Lord willing, we'll see you. Yeah, I mean, that was regular speech.
As God wills.
Yes, as Are we willing to talk that way?
Yes.
Even in front of people who aren't Christians. Because I think maybe to a religious crowd out there, that won't be a big deal. But I think there's another group of people out there in their life. Okay. What does that mean? Why are they saying that? And again, that might be also one of those long-term things that just over time, as they hear that, they're like, why? And maybe there's a question that eventually they get the courage to come and ask. I want to know why that is. Yes, ma'am.
When I was asked why, I didn't respond in anger or said bad words or whatever. I would say, my God would be so displeased. I worked with children, and I just said, my God would be so displeased with me.
Yeah. Or God's been so good to me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to raise my kids without God's help. We'll provoke one of two responses. Some people will say, oh, I said something nice about his kids and he went religious on me. I'm never doing that again. The other thing might be, is any kid's got a kid right now that got busted for pot in his locker and he wants to know, why'd you say that? What's God doing for you and your kids? Guess what that is? That's exactly what Randy described a minute ago. That's the next conversation. Now we've gone from this to, okay, maybe we'll talk a little bit about this. Maybe there's more to be said now, right? All right, so y'all keep thinking about that, and we'll work that list all the way through the class.